Well, good morning. We are going to look today at three concepts about the subject of fellowship. That first word up there, I will use frequently. And I will tell you up front, if you know any Greek at all, I'm going to abuse the word. I'm going to use it in unusual ways that aren't accurate in the Greek language, but will help you. And there's a reason why. And I'll explain that to you as we move through these three lessons today. Thanks for being here. I'm glad that we can share together. You've been so kind to me already. Everybody has been so receptive to the lessons, comments that you've offered and asked, questions and made observations that were helpful to me and showed not only that you were listening, but that these lessons resonated with you Friday and Saturday. And so this morning, we kind of move into a phase two. We talked Friday night and Saturday about why the church exists, and in particular, its value to us and to God as we corporately worship and as we look around and try to serve one another. Now we'll kind of go a little deeper dive into what that fellowship means as the people of God. So let's move into that. Psalm 142 and verse 4 is where I want to begin. You don't have to turn there. I'm just going to cite it and move on. But it says this. David says, "Look to the right and see, for there's no one who regards me. There is no escape for me. No one cares for my soul." He doesn't say, look to the right, look to the left. He says, look to the right, only because the right hand is where the closest person would be. God saying to Jesus, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet. You always have somebody who's your right-hand person. And David here says, look to the right. There isn't anybody even there. I don't have a best friend. I don't have any friends at all. I got nobody there. Nobody cares for my soul. I believe that's a modern lament. I believe that's true of people today. And my guess is it's true of people right here, right now. Nobody cares for my soul. Oh, I'm not saying it's rampant, that it's extremely widespread. That isn't my point. But I would guarantee you, in an audience of this size, there are people who believe, I don't have anybody that really cares about me. And you wonder how that could be. But I hope that we will understand why people might have that objection. And if you're thinking, well, people are already talking to Ralph, you're wrong. Nobody's talked to me. I just know, because I know in my dealings as a shepherd of a congregation, this is reality. And you may wonder, how could people feel alone and lonely in a crowd like this? But I already told you yesterday why that can happen and how perhaps the loneliest number is not one alone, but one alone in a crowd, where everybody else feels a part of what's going on except you. So we want to talk about this. We don't know the true meaning of fellowship. I'm persuaded very few of us understand the deeper meaning of fellowship. And I don't say that in any disparaging way about you, like I've got all the knowledge of that. But it took me a long time to come to an understanding of what real fellowship is. And I'm going to be using this word, koinonia, that you see here, because I want to define that word. It is the word that's translated fellowship in the Bible. But I want to use the word koinonia because every time I use that, I want you to stop and rethink what that word means. Because we all have a definition of our own of what fellowship is. So I want to begin by showing you how important fellowship is in the Bible. So let's look at this. Go to Acts chapter 2 and verse 42. We're going to move fairly quickly through these passages today, so I'm going to ask you to jump over there pretty quickly. Acts chapter 2, verse 42. Here's what it says. This New Testament church founded in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost, some 50-odd days after Jesus dies at the Passover. They were continually devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. I want you to notice something. They were continually devoting themselves to the apostles' doctrine, to prayer, to the breaking of bread, and to fellowship. Now, I put those in a different order than they are in the text for a reason. My guess is that most of us would put three of those in a similar category, but if we were playing the game, which one's not like the others, we'd probably put that last one in that category. That it just doesn't have the same weight. It doesn't have the same emphasis. It doesn't have the same thrust as those first three. What I mean by that is this. We all know there is no way we could be here, do what we're doing, be what we are in relationship to God or each other without the apostles' doctrine. So we all brought our Bibles. I mean, we got our Bibles here. We have our swords because we know the apostles' doctrine, and not only the apostles' teaching, but the teaching of the prophets also, that is kind of understood to be part of the apostles' doctrine, is absolutely critical to our welfare. There isn't one of us that would say, our relationship with the apostles' doctrine, our use of it, our practice of it, it's okay. It's okay. We wouldn't say that. If we said that, we'd be saying that very apologetically. Prayer? Oh, we know how important that is in our lives. Even if we're not praying very well, we would say we ought to. Every one of us would say, prayer is a very important part of my life as a child of God. I can't live without that. My connection with God is my prayer life. And the stronger that is, the more likely I am to be the kind of Christian I want to be. Breaking of bread, many of us would say, that's why I'm here this morning. I'm here to participate in this in just a little while. And that's critical to my life. Every week I come back to it. And it's important. But when we get to that fourth one, fellowship, it's kind of like that's a byproduct of all the others. It's not really something I have to work at. It's not really something I have to concentrate on. It just happens. And for some of us, we'd say, it's really good. And for some, we'd say, nah, it's not so good. I don't really connect very well with people here. But that's okay because I'm getting a lot of good teaching and I'm praying and I'm taking the Lord's Supper. So the fellowship, that can kind of fall by the wayside. And I'm telling you, it is important to consider the company this word keeps. This word fellowship is in the company of three of the most important aspects of being a child of God ever spoken of in the Scriptures. If nothing else, the very fact that it is one of four says it is very important in our lives. Secondly, in that text, before we leave it, notice that it says the disciples were devoting themselves to it. That's a very strong term. That's not the term they were experiencing it. It's not the term they were acknowledging it. It isn't the term they were practicing it. It isn't the term they were enjoying it. It says they were devoting themselves to it. I mean, that's the kind of word, that's the word devoting themselves, that they were giving undivided attention to it. Now listen, we would all say that about the apostles' doctrine. We're devoted to it. You look around here. We got Bible classes going on all the time. We got Bibles in the pew. The preachers are going to preach from the apostles and the prophets' doctrine. This is what we're about as a people of God. All our songs, they all key on the apostles' doctrine. Yeah, we're devoted to it. Prayer? Yeah, we're devoted to it. We're going to pray numerous times today. We're going to pray before things start. We'll pray when things end. We'll pray in the middle of things. We're going to pray. We're people of prayer. That's important. We're devoted to prayer. We don't just pray publicly, and when we're collectively gathered, we pray privately all the time. Pray for parking spaces downtown. Pray for everything. We pray. We're a people of prayer. Breaking of bread, we're devoted to it. Absolutely every single week. You wouldn't come in here any week and not see these emblems on this table. That somebody says, nah, we're not going to do that this week. No, we are, because we're devoted to it. But what about fellowship? What about fellowship? Are you getting my point? It's that we concentrate on those others, but fellowship we almost treat as a byproduct. It just happens. We come in here, and for some of us, we just don't even think about concentrating on it, about devoting ourselves to it. We walk in here and we're ready for the word, we're ready for the prayer, we're ready for this. But fellowship, it may happen or it may not. I might go away from here as lonely as when I came here because I'm not devoting myself to it. Listen, there is an entire book in the New Testament that is written solely for the purpose of developing fellowship. Did you know that? An entire book. John's premise in 1 John chapter 1, verse 3, is we write these things that you may know our fellowship is with the Father and with the Son, and you may have fellowship with us. That whole book is written about how to have fellowship. Now, I'm not saying it's more important than these others, but can you point to a single book in the New Testament that's totally devoted to the supper of the Lord? No. How about prayer? No. How about an entire book that's just concentrating on how we should understand the apostles' doctrine and teaching? No. But you got a book, a whole book that's there to teach us how to have fellowship with one another. There are a couple of reasons, I think, why we don't have the same appreciation for this fellowship that we have for these other three. Part of it is the way the world has so abused the term. The religious world has so abused the concept of fellowship that we just don't understand it, or if we do understand it, we eschew it. We dismiss it because it's so trite. So you hear the words like fellowship halls. We talk about fellowship meals. We talk about campus fellowships. We talk about koinonia coffee houses. And that's the way the world uses the term. Hey, we're going to have a fellowship this afternoon. You know, and what does that usually mean? We're going to gather at a park and we're going to eat together, or we're going to play games, or the kids are all going to have fellowship. And it's often joined with the words fun. Fellowship and fun, they kind of go together. So we, and I think rightly so, have said, that's not what we're about. That's not what we're about. So we may dismiss fellowship as a really important part of our lives because the world has so abused it. Now, some of us go a little deeper, and we get into meeting with one another, sharing life with one another, and that's part of it. Hey, let's go have some fellowship with the Johnsons. We'll go out for coffee, talk about their lives, see how they're doing. That's not a total misuse of the word, but it's not what is being talked about here. So some of us go a little deeper, we think spiritually, but we really haven't made a deep dive yet on that subject. Because I want to tell you, fellowship is more than Bible study. We have a group meets every Tuesday morning at Chick-fil-A at 6:30. It's a group of men that meet there, and we study the Bible together. We have fellowship? Yeah. Is that the extent of our fellowship? I mean, is that probably what is being talked about here, that this is what they were doing, getting together and sharing sandwiches at Chick-fil-A for breakfast as we share the bread of life? I think that's part of it, but I think it's deeper than that. It's far deeper, deeper than that. And praying together. We're going to get together, have some fellowship, we're going to pray together. Is it deeper than that? I think it is. I think it's more encompassing than even those things. So let's move into that. Let's translate this word, koinonia. It is translated by these words. It's sometimes called participation, sometimes partnership. I'm saying in the Bible, sometimes translated by the word sharing and sometimes by the word fellowship. It is all of those things. It is a common word. And when I say that, coin is common itself. It's a common word, and it was used in all kinds of applications, but the disciples riveted their attention on a particular kind of sharing and participation. So it was a word that the world used oftentimes, but the disciples made it a particularly important word for them. So when we talk about that word, let's consider it and what it means. Because there is, first of all, a common purpose in the word koinonia. It means sharing in an act or a desire or a goal together. So let me show you that. One idea of this word is sharing in a joint venture. I'm a fisherman. You're a fisherman. We could have fellowship together. I didn't know you did that. I do that. Let's do that together. So it may be the idea of sharing in something that we are pursuing together. You're riding downtown. You go downtown every day. I live in your neighborhood. I go downtown every day. Why don't we have fellowship in our ride? Now you may say, that sounds funny. That feels funny because fellowship sounds like a real spiritual word, and that doesn't seem like a very spiritual act. But that is the way that the Greeks would have used that word. They would have said, let's have fellowship in our ride together. Because I'm going where you're going, and we have something in common there. It involves relationship with others and sharing common life with believers. I'm a Christian, you're a Christian. All of a sudden, things are different for us. I remember I was out in California, and I was actually on the streets of California. I wasn't with some other Christians. I was by myself, and I happened to get in a conversation with a guy there. It's the first time I ever heard this phrase. He was asking me, what are you doing out here? And I told him, I'm out here preaching. Oh, really, where do you preach? And I said, well, I'm going to be preaching at this congregation, the Church of Christ. And he goes, you're CSC? I'm CSC. Sea of C is what he was saying. Church of Christ. You're CSC? I'm CFC. Well, from that point on, we had a different relationship. It was different. I mean, it felt different from that moment on. Oh, we have this in common. You're this, I'm this also. And so the conversation took a different turn. It came to a deeper level. It wasn't real deep. I mean, I'm not sending them Christmas cards every year or anything like that, but it moved to a different level because we found out we shared something in common. That happens all the time. You know, you say, you follow football? Yeah, I do. What's your team? They say the team. That's my team too. I like them. All of a sudden, it moves to a deeper level. We get that. As Christians, we automatically share some things that should bring us immediately to a deeper kind of relationship with each other. So we go back to that Acts chapter 2. I want you to think about how that happened. There were all these people who had come together to celebrate Pentecost in the city of Jerusalem. They didn't know each other. They had something in common, They were Jewish by bent, and they had come for Pentecost. So they shared all that. They had fellowship in that matter. But then they heard Peter. And Peter was preaching. And while many of the people that were in that group said, not listening to that, I'm moving away, 3,000 of them said, man, that touched my heart. I want that. And they were baptized into Christ. And when they came up out of the water and they looked at each other, they had more in common than the fact that they were all wet. They now had a new life. They were sharing a new life together. So then you come to this Acts 2:42, and they are devoting themselves to this fellowship. They're meeting each other for the first time. Now, I often wonder about the dynamics of how that happened, 3,000 of them. I'll tell you, if I were in that group, here's what I'd have been praying for. Lord, give us name tags. I don't even know these people. There are 3,000 of them. My wife and I came to Jerusalem for Pentecost, and all of a sudden we've got 2,998 new members of my family, and I don't even know them. But I'm going to work on it. Why? I'm devoting myself to it. Why? Because they're my family now. I have a different relationship. So people walk into your assemblies, and they're of two different natures. Some of them are just people that are seeking, and you should definitely be reaching out to people like that. I mean, they have walked into a circumstance that's very difficult for people to walk into. Because they know, most of you know each other. And you're an overwhelming force that they have come into, and they don't know how they'll be received. So just glancing at them or looking at them or telling them you're in my seat doesn't work. Doesn't work. And it's okay for you to laugh about that, but I've been in churches where that happened to me. That's happened to me. I've been sitting down and had somebody come up and stand at the end of the pew and look at me. And I'm thinking, do I initiate this conversation or do you? I don't know. Maybe there's a different format here. So I say, I'm Ralph Walker. And they say their name and they still stand there. And I said, sorry, you need to get by. They said, no, you're in my seat. Whoop. You know, I could have played the card. Do you know I'm a guest speaker here? But I didn't. I mean, I'll have the chance to go up there and say something about you if I want to in a few moments. But that's one group of people. But there's another kind of person that comes into your midst, and they come in with the right of fellowship. They come into your midst saying, welcome me, I'm your brother, I'm your sister, we're your family. And when you find those people, there should be a connection because you have a common purpose. You've come here not only to do the same things today, but you've come here to be the same thing they have come here to be. Worshippers of the Holy God, as Jeff mentioned in his prayer, and disciples learning how to be more like Jesus. And that ought to be an instant connection for every one of us, this common purpose. Because they were related to Christ, these people were related to each other, and it was an instantaneous thing. But this word also denotes partnership in various ways. I want to go back to Luke. I want to show you a couple of passages real quick. A couple of passages. I'm in Luke chapter 5, and I'm looking at verse 10. The three lessons that we're going to do today are actually part of a larger series that I normally do. It's 7 lessons long, because 7's the perfect number. And in that series, I keep coming back to, here's our word. Our word is found here. And by the end of that series, most of the people who've listened to all of those lessons in order, they start seeing the word koinonia. Now, my guess is you may see it or may not see it in this verse. It says, "And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, 'Do not fear, from now on you'll be catching men.'" Our word koinonia is in that text, but it's not in a spiritual sense at all. It's the word they were partners with Simon. Partners. That's a great word, partners. My father-in-law, John Robarts, used that word all the time, although he used it in a real southern sense. So there was no T, there was a D where the T was. So it was partner, partner. And he would use that of everybody. I think sometimes he used it because he didn't remember names well, but he liked that word, partner. But there is a sense in which that's a great understanding of this word fellowship, because partners are pursuing something together, and their partnership is based on what they are pursuing. It's not a matter of we're partners because we're related. We're partners in something because I'm pursuing it, you're pursuing it, let's pursue it together. That's the idea. So it's a really good term. And for you folks in Texas that have used the word partner for a long time, it'd be a really good way for y'all to be greeting one another. Hey, partner, how you doing? And what's even better than that is if you go to Galatians chapter 2, verse 9, when Paul talks about going to Jerusalem, he says that the disciples there were not really understanding or receiving him well, except he uses this term, recognizing the grace that had been given to me, Galatians 2, 9, James and Cephas and John, who were reputed to be pillars, gave to me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship. So sticking that right hand out and saying, put her there, partner, is a really good biblical term. It's a biblical concept. The right hand of fellowship, giving the right hand, putting somebody in the position of favor. We're partners in what we do. It is used in a spiritual sense in Philemon, verse 17, when the Apostle Paul is talking to Philemon about Onesimus. Here's what he says in verse 17. "If then you regard me a partner, accept him as you would me." Hey, if we're partners in what we're trying to do, accept Onesimus as a partner in what we are trying to do together. Partners. It's a sharing together. And those partnerships are formed to attain a common objective. In this case, our partnership is in glorifying God and becoming more like Christ. That's what I'm trying to do. Is that what you're trying to do? We're partners. We're working together. But there's another sense in that word. It's not only a common purpose, but it's also a common possession. The second idea of this word koinonia is not just sharing in something, but sharing with someone. That's a different idea altogether. The word communion is with union. It is a sharing of spiritual things with others. So what we're sharing, now listen, this is really important. What we share together, not just sharing in, but sharing with, is all the things that make us what we are. So we share truth together. Because that's really important to us as the people of God. We share God's love together. The Bible will talk about that frequently. That God has loved us, so we ought to what? Love each other. How can you love God whom you have not seen if you don't love your brother whom you have seen? It's kind of a little bit of an embarrassing story on one hand, but on the other hand, it illustrates what we're talking about. I was in my office when I was preaching in North Carolina, and I was going to meet for the first time a new brother. I had not met him. He was preaching in another state altogether, but he was being brought to North Carolina by a brother I did know. So I knew one man, and I didn't know the other man, and the man I knew was going to be bringing him to the office so I could meet him. So I was waiting, and I saw a car pull up, and then I could hear people coming up the gravel walk and up the steps. So I went to the door, and the first person I saw was my friend David, and I had known him, and I gave him a big hug, you know, because I knew him, and we hugged each other and talked for a second, and then there's a second guy there. And I figured, okay, that's the other guy. And so I immediately went, I hugged him too. I'm a hugger. It was free hug day, whatever that was. So I just immediately hugged him too. And I said, welcome, so glad you're here. I'm really looking forward to talking with you. And then there was a third guy behind them, and I thought, well, they brought somebody else. I went to hug him, and he was going doing this. He said, I'm just an electrician. I'm just doing some work outside. See, he hadn't earned the hug. See, he knew that. See, my point is he wasn't part of that. I wasn't going to share God's love. Now, if he had said, I'm the electrician, I wouldn't have said, well, I'm glad I didn't hug you. That's not the point. But I was sharing the love of God with people I thought were sharing in the love of God. And the guy was probably right to say to me, not me, not me. I'm just here to do some work outside, and I wanted to make sure we could park our trucks here. We share the things that make us what we are, that matter to us. Listen, I have no problem at all talking with my brothers and sisters about lighter things of our lives, because sometimes those increase our connections with each other. You know, I love finding new places to eat, unusual places to eat, diners, drive-ins, and dives are my kind of place. And so when somebody comes to me, and if they come to me at the church building, and a guy did not too long ago, he said, boy, I found a place for you. It's got the best Cuban in town. I'm automatically arguing, no, you haven't found that. I know where that is, but I'm willing to listen. There's a connection we have there. I don't say, no, let's not talk about that at all. But I want to tell you something. If our soul conversations with each other have to do with hobbies or sports or food or our likes or dislikes about politics, if that's the extent of our conversation with one another, we're not devoting ourselves to biblical koinonia. That's not biblical koinonia. It's deeper than that. And there have got to be times when we move deeper than that. So let me tell you a couple of things I think are important for you on this matter. I think it's important, and I think it's valuable, and I think it's right for us to periodically put a Bible in front of each other and say, what's God been teaching you lately? If that's what our life is about, that's a valid question. The first time I think I was ever asked that question was when I went to a place when we were living in Mississippi. I went to a place called the Koinonia Coffee House. I was kind of intrigued by the title anyway. And I went in, and it was filled with religious fanatics. I mean, when I say that, I don't mean that in a bad way at all. They were fanatical about the Word of God. So I went up to the counter and sat down, ordered a hot chocolate, because I don't drink coffee. I just never acquired a taste for it. I'm confessing. And as I sat there alone drinking my hot chocolate, a guy came up to me, sat down next to me, slid a Bible over in front of me and said, what's God teaching you lately? Fortunately, I had been in a study early that morning on my own, and I could say, well, here's what I studied just today, and we had a great study together. But that's a valid question for the child of God. What's God been teaching you lately? And if you say, well, I don't know, we're probably as inappropriately answering that question as our children would be when they come home from school and we say, what'd you learn today? And they say, nothing. Nothing. Now, we can usually probe beyond the nothing and get something. But if that's really the answer, somebody's failing. Either the student is failing to assimilate the information, or the school is failing to disseminate the information. Somebody's failing, because that's the purpose of school. Now, how many of you, by a show of hands, are disciples of Jesus Christ? How many of you? Disciples of Jesus Christ. Okay, you just raised your hand and said you're in school. You're in the school of Christ. It's your job to learn about Jesus. Wouldn't it be wonderful? Wouldn't it be wonderful, shepherds, those of you in the bishopric of this congregation, wouldn't it be wonderful if after the service this morning, there were little pockets of people all over this building and out in the foyer and out in the parking lot, and they're all pointing at a passage and they're discussing it and talking about that, that's what is uniting your people here, the flock of God, that what they are eating is the Word of God. It'd be wonderful. That's what koinonia is. It's sharing with others the things that we have. So in Acts chapter 2, these converts had come from all over the earth, and yet each became knit to each other after they had become Christ. What united them? What united them? It wasn't their socioeconomic status. It wasn't their political leanings. It wasn't their likes or dislikes for Jerusalem or touring. What united them was the teachings of Christ that the Apostle Peter and the other apostles had shared with them. That's what they shared in common. That is what they koinonia'd. That's an improper use of the word, but you get it. They were koinonia-ing in the things that really mattered to them. The Word of God. So sliding over next to somebody and saying, share with me what matters most to us in this family of God is absolutely proper. And we need to ask ourselves the question, you do in this congregation, what is the most important thing you all, y'all, have in common? What is it? And it shouldn't be this. It shouldn't be, well, we're all pretty much on the same socioeconomic level. Or we all even speak the same language. We speak Southern. Or we all are Texans. Or we all like fill in the blank. It shouldn't be that. The one thing that should be true of us from this end of the building to this end of the building, the one thing, vary as we may by race, language, socioeconomic scale, educational abilities, the kind of work we do, the political leanings that we have, from this end of the building to this end of the building, the one thing that should unite us all and be most important is I belong to Christ and you belong to Christ. We belong to Christ together. And if that is the case, if that's the most important thing, that ought to be the thing that we're talking about most. And sharing with each other most. Because I want to tell you something. It's okay. It's okay for me to have a special relationship with Josh Metcalf. Because he came from North Carolina, and I lived in North Carolina, and I loved calling it home, and he loved calling it home. And I know his parents, and I know where he lived. Those are fine things for us to have in common. That's okay, and that may strengthen the most important tie I have with Josh, which is the same tie I have with every one of you. I belong to Christ, and you belong to Christ. So let's share in that more than anything else about our lives. So that will cause us to share in material things. In Acts chapter 2, beginning in verse 44 and 45, those disciples, because they had the relationship they had with each other, all those who had believed were together and they had all things in common. There's a variation of our word koinonia there. They koinonia'd those things. They began selling their property and possessions, and they were sharing them with all. There's our word again. That's our word, koinonia. They were koinonia-ing them with everybody. They were sharing them as anyone might have need. And then this, in Romans chapter 12 and verse 13, the Apostle Paul talks about contributing to the needs of the saints and practicing hospitality. That word contributing to the needs of the saints, it's a variation of our word koinonia. They are koinonia-ing in the needs of the saints. They're sharing. So I love the expression. And one time, ask a guy, I was short on cash because I hadn't brought enough to an event, and I said to a guy in Mississippi when I lived there, I told you some of the expressions of my brothers and sisters there. I said, hey, do you have $5 you could loan me? And he said, hey, as long as I got a biscuit, you got half. Isn't that a great thought? No, seriously, isn't that a great thought? As long as I got a biscuit, you got half. Yeah, I'll contribute to your needs. If I can meet it, I'm there. That's what fellowship is. That's what koinonia is. I got something. Do you need it? Sure. You can have it or you can borrow it. That can get out of hand at times. You know, there were a few people that I got to the point where I didn't want to compliment anything they had because they were so willing to give it up and share it. I remember one time saying to a guy, I love that tie, and he immediately ripped it off and gave it to me. I mean, immediately. I said, no, I wasn't asking. No, take it. You really like it? Take it. So then I said, I really like your car. I mean, I like your car better than I like your tie. Didn't work. He didn't give me the keys. See, here's the point, and then we're going to close. The sharing of spiritual things isn't so much the sharing of material things isn't so much a matter of we have to do this. It is a logical extension of the thinking that says, you're my family. You're my family. So if you're my family, we're going to share together in the things that we need from each other. So it isn't so much a matter of we are called upon to do this, we have to do this, as much as it is, it's your brother or your sister. It's that great Holly song from the 1960s. He ain't heavy, he's my brother. It's going to happen because I care about you, because you're my family. So in thinking about our relationship in the church, when somebody has a need, it shouldn't be all right, how much they need, we'll do something about it. I got to confess to you, there are times when I feel that way, and I repent when I do. I need to repent when I do, because that's not the right attitude. That's like my sitting at a table and eating food and passing it around while one person is at the table and nobody's giving them food and they're starving to death. That just doesn't make sense. Not if you're at my table. Not if you're with me. So this idea of koinonia is not only sharing in something. Hey, you do this, I do this. Let's do it together. Hey, hey, I didn't know you liked that. I love that too. Let's go do it together. It's not just that. It's sharing with. It's, do you need this? Well, yeah, I have this. I'm glad to share it with you. Why? You're not heavy. You're my brother. You're my sister. We're family. So Christians shouldn't have to be ordered to help each other. Shouldn't have to be ordered. It should happen because we have a true understanding of what koinonia is. So I'm not saying this tritely. We're going to stop and give you a chance to have some koinonia with each other. And I don't mean by that to ask, what'd you do last night and what's going on this weekend and how did your teams fare yesterday, or what's your new hobby you've taken up? I saw you on Pinterest. It's not that. I'm going to give you a chance to take a few minutes, and I challenge you to share in koinonia in the things that really matter to us. It's going to be awkward for you because I've told you to do it. I know that. I realize that. But maybe you'll be a little more aware of where we're going with this great term that has equal weight as the apostles' doctrine, as prayer, and as the breaking of the bread, which we're going to be so privileged to participate in together in just a few moments. All right, we'll stand adjourned. Thanks for listening.